Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and life coach Joel Elston here. Today is Thursday, October the 11th, 2018, 8 a.m. Eastern Time. Your first daily dose of happy for this beautiful Thursday. We hope that your Thursday's off to a great start, just like we want every day to be off to a great start for you. And we hope that you are finding the joyful side of life, because that joyful side of life is where all the good things happen. And if you're not finding it as much as you'd like, that's why you're listening to LOA Today, right, Joel? I mean, that's the whole point.
That's sort of the point. I mean, that's sort of 101. I guess we can wrap up for today.
Okay, well, we'll see you all next time here on LOA Today.
Sort of the shortcut right there.
There it is. Oh, it's true. It's funny, though. And before we get going, Joel, I want to get the promos in. I've been trying to get them in early in on the podcast, so we're going to get them in right out of the way, and then we can jump into what we're going to talk about. First and foremost, if you're not yet a subscriber to LOA Today, please do so. Please become one, because you get all the great content that we create 11 times a week with all the co-hosts every single week, coming right to your smartphone. The instructions are on the homepage at loatoday.net if you're not quite sure how to go do the subscription yourself. And once you are a subscriber, and for all our existing subscribers, please do continue to post about loatoday.net on your favorite social media channel. It's helping tremendously. We're reaching more and more people, and that's the whole goal, to get this into the hands of as many people as we can. I mean, I've been saying it for a few days now, Joel, but I mean, can you imagine if we're reaching like 100,000 people with that, with each episode? Can you imagine what that would be like? That just blows my mind.
That's such a an exciting idea, and you know, the concept that it changed my life, it's changed your life, and millions of other people have gotten into that. Be able to take that message, and it's out of an act of love, in a sense, toward the concept that we do this every week.
It's
amazing, and to watch it take place, and watch people have these epiphanies and watch it unfold, is that's exciting to me. And when people who have spent a lifetime thinking in a wrong way turn it around almost on a dime, is such a breath of, you know, everything's possible when you understand the law of attraction. That is why I get up every morning. It's just, no matter what's going on, everything's possible.
Oh yeah. You get it every day, not just from doing the weekly podcast with me, but also just through your practice, because you're seeing all these clients coming through your office. That must be like exhilarating to see all the people who do their turnarounds right in front of your eyes.
It really is. And some of them, you know, some of them is almost instantaneous, and others are resistant or unintentionally resistant to the process. And, they all get there, but I operate, I'll speak for me, and I'm sure most of my co-hosts would agree with this concept. We operate that, number one, you know, obviously the law of attraction, but the concepts under the category of law of attraction, we have within inside of us everything that we need to quote unquote fix ourselves. Not that there's anything really wrong with us, but you get the point. The answer to our question already is inside of us. I believe that. The law of attraction, is a conduit to get what we really want and what we're really desiring in life. But helping people uncover what's already in there is what we do. We've used the term many times when we're talking about the discovery of the law of attraction. I've used that phrase where I had an awakening the moment I heard the first little bit, the baby steps of law of attraction. I instantly knew that's what I was seeking. So it wasn't like I had to be sold hard on it. It was like I had to, I've known that instinctively. So I believe that everyone has this programming inside of them of how to do it. And the point of life, to me, is to figure it out. It's sort of we don't realize we're sort of in a big puzzle game right now. You're born with this stuff, and your job is to make it make sense. And you were born without a manual, and you got to figure it out. And the beauty is, it's like one of those big reality games. We're the reality game within a reality game here.
I love it. Absolutely. That's what it is, isn't it? Because we weren't given a manual at birth. We weren't given, you know, the instructions, the keys to the city. We had to figure out where the keys were and then what to do with them once we got them. It's like a video game that has no instructions, which is kind of fun.
there was way back in the old days when I was younger, they had, I think it was a superhero movie, and I think it was like The Greatest American Hero or something like that. And the concept was this average person found a suit that gave him superpowers.
Mm, yeah.
But he had no understand. There was nothing that came along with it.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to figure out the superpowers.
Right.
And I loved the show. And as a kid, I just loved the show. It was a good show. And as a kid, as an adult, I'm looking at the behind the scenes meaning, and in my world, we already have this superpower. Figuring out how to use it is the answer. That's the point. That when we complete this journey on the planet, we were put here, or we chose to come here, whatever your views are, to complete this mission of discovery. And some people get it, some people don't, and you realize you're spending a lot of energy, and that is sometimes good, sometimes really bad, because your energy is either propelling you toward or rejecting you away from. It's what you choose to do with it. And that's sort of the lead in. You know, we got an email from, obviously we're not going to mention any names, from a listener. And this listener described a scenario. And do you want to describe the scenario, Walt?
Yeah, well, why don't I just read the email from her? Because, I mean, first of all, I want to thank her for writing in. But here's what she says. She says, hi, Walt. Firstly, thanks so much for this fantastic podcast. Thank you. Appreciate that. I am one of those subscribers that you talk about that listen to one podcast, subscribes, and goes on to listen to LOA Today back to back. I love it. I listen to you while I run around the local woodland, and it's a great start to my day. I prefer to listen to you than music because I can still hear the birds and other wildlife in the background. It's been instrumental in helping me learn to love running. I have a question which I hope you might be able to help me with on one of your programs. I have a great deal of anxiety tangled up around authority figures at work. I had a string of bad bosses in previous jobs, and now the management I work with are decent. I am still attracting negativity from them because I'm expecting it. The rational side of my brain knows what is happening, but I'm having trouble untangling that previous negativity. I get quite nervous before meetings, and I'm not sure how to clear it. I feel like I've at least acknowledged it recently, which has helped a little bit. But I'd love to hear if anyone has a similar experience and tips on how to unravel myself. I'm good at my job. I'm worthy of my place in the company and my salary, but how do I get rid of that? Occasionally, I can get myself in a good place, and I even managed a rampage once, feeling amazing energy while repeating things like, I am respected and admired at work. I love all the successes I am getting. Achievements flow to me regularly with ease. And the results were amazing. I had such a great 2 weeks after that. Wait, have I just answered my own question? Maybe I just need to continue to do that every day. I find it difficult to get into a good feeling place with it all, even though I do have success at work. I also work in an industry where people push themselves forward and shout about their achievements, but I was brought up to be much more modest and not show off about successes, which means I don't get recognized for what I do, even though I do as well as my colleagues. I'm working on manifesting a publishing contract for a book that I'm writing, which will mean I won't have to work the traditional 9-to-5 anymore, but I really want to excel in my current role and be able to leave on a high. Any help or input would be massively welcome. Thanks for everything. That's quite a letter.
I really loved reading that. And as I was preparing for the show, you had forwarded me that letter. And I the reason I was sharing that piece before, we were all given this internal, as she wrote her description very well, what a great, you know, acknowledgement and use of the law of attraction she's discussing.
Oh, yeah.
But when she said, wait, have I answered my own question?
Right.
Well, yes, you have. We still will offer feedback and, you know, suggestions, but she, as she wrote, she was putting it on paper and realized, wow, this is the answer.
Yeah.
And then she goes on to explain a little more, which also shows some of the resistance and the incongruities of what she's putting out to the law of attraction.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the piece that, I want, on one level, I was brought up to be modest and not show off, but I want more recognition. So she's incongruent in what she's putting out in that point. I think, you know, part of, if I were working with her face to face, I would work on, let's redefining what that means, you know, as far as being modest and not show off. You can readily own your achievements. You can make sure people are aware of the work you're doing without showing off, and it doesn't necessarily mean you're not modest, especially when you're in an environment where you need to show that. And you know, on one level, she's saying, I want to be successful in my job, and I'm also trying to get a book contract, which will allow me not to do the 9-to-5. So there's a little incongruency going on there, a little difference in what you're putting out there. So the law of attraction picks up on that. But the first part is absolutely dead on. And she continues that, you know, everything she's saying when she went on the, I love her term, on a rampage, a law of attraction rampage. That's a great, yeah, I love that. You know, feeling amazing energy, repeating things I respected and admired at work, and I love all the success I'm getting. Achievements flow to me with regular ease. That's an amazing line.
It is.
And the results were amazing, as she said. Mm-hmm. So that piece, she's completely on to. At work, do that. Where you're at, you know, I used this line the other day with a client, and we're this person's rebuilding their life after a bout of quite a few years of in-depth gambling addiction. Having to sort of rebuild a life often requires doing jobs and stuff you don't want to do in the beginning. And then you eventually sort of move on to stuff that makes sense. In the beginning, my recovery had a bunch of bizarre little jobs. And I decided no matter what job I was going to do, I'm going to use the law of attraction concept. If I were shoveling chicken manure, I'm going to shovel the best chicken manure. And I'm going to be that guy. I could either focus on I'm shoving poop or the fact that I am making money. It's just this incredible, I'm in charge of which way I get to look at it. So her view of at work, I want to be successful. Her job is obviously going to require on some level making sure people see her success. She does that without arrogance, but at the same time making sure that people are aware of what she's doing, that feedback that she's seeking is part of her job. And we all need it. There's nothing wrong with that. It's you know, we're conditioned to almost excuse success or apologize for it. And I think that's, I don't know where that came from, but it is, to me, not bragging is certain, bragging and arrogance is different than exuding the confidence and exuding the who you are in your industry and being that person where great things flow. I love that piece. And if she keeps doing that, work will continue to be there. The book contract is, in today's environment, you know, where you're, that's an incredible idea. Keep manifesting a publishing contract. And I hope your book eventually sells, you know, 10 million copies. However, most people that write books nowadays, as we know, as you and I are both published authors, in today's environment, it is unlikely any book would sell in the beginning where you wouldn't need another source of income. Eventually that could happen. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we believe that. I actually happened to see the young lady from South Carolina who's resigning as the UN ambassador, Haley something, I believe.
Nikki Haley,
They had published a thing about her financial stuff today, and I don't know why this was relevant, but it does match her show. And she had written a book. I didn't know she'd written a book. And they were talking about the income she had coming in. She has a lot of debt since she's been in public service. And the amount made from her book didn't qualify to be relevant, I think was the term, as far as income. Now, this is somebody at a pretty high level writing a book that didn't get qualified. So a published author, while it's an incredible thing to do and can lead to other things, it isn't like back in the day, if you had a book that was published, you pretty much had a career in there.
Right.
So when you're looking at it, she can certainly manifest a publishing contract for a book while she's more successful at her 9-to-5. Eventually she could roll out of that environment as well. But getting it on a level that makes sense, and where it matches, you can't not want to do it and want to do it at the same time. That's the incongruent or the non-matching message you're putting into law of attraction.
And that's something that everybody does. You do it. I've done it. We've all done it. It's not like there's not something wrong with you for having done that. That's the point I'm trying to make. Because God, I'd probably do that five times every minute. But the fact is, you know, that's who we are. We are people who can be incongruent. We live in what they call, you know, a world of contrast. And when you're in contrast, you're just going to do incongruent things at times. The goal, though, yes, is to turn it around. The goal is to do whatever we can to stay congruent. And the more that we do that consciously, the better we get at it. The better we get at it, the more good things happen. And that's really what it's all about.
Yeah, I have a client that was a young person. He's out of college, and he's been looking for a job, and he's having a hard time getting a job. And so his family sent him to me to sort of see what we could do to help speed that process along to get him out of the house, I'm sure. And as we were talking, I saw this trend develop, and he described to me this. He was interviewing for this high end job. It's a pretty good job for somebody in their mid 20s, high paying job, and it came with quite a bit of benefits. It was a job, you know, more of a traditional big company job, health benefits, 401k matching. And so he's interviewing for the job, and I'm realizing the inner dialogue he's having. He says, "Well, should I buy this? Should I accept their stock plan? Should I?" And he went on this thing, you know, which health plan should I choose? And I said, "Well, first of all, you're creating anxiety about choices that haven't even been made yet." Because you don't need to be made yet because you haven't been offered the job. And he says, "Well, I thought that was a good way to manifest the job." I said, "No, what you're doing is you've created anxiety toward the job, and you're telling the law of attraction, no. That's going to create too much stress." And to get him to change that, because as soon as he would get an interview, so that interview went incredibly well. I'm sure they're going to offer the job. I guess I got to buy some new clothes. I wonder if my mom will let me get a new suit. I said, take a deep breath and stop with the anxiety building after this interview. So we worked really hard. He gets another interview a week later, and I said, "Call me the moment you're done with the interview." He said, "The interview was incredible." And he started to say something else, and I said, "Be quiet. Stop. take a deep breath. Where's your next interview and what company is that with?" He said, "Well, you want to hear about the interview?" I go, no, that interview is done. I'm glad it went great. If you want that job, let's put it out there. That's a great job for you. But you are in demand. People want to talk to you. So let's not get stuck on this and creating anxiety." So he started talking about he's expecting another interview call back. The guy beeped in, from the second the new company interview is coming up. He said, "Oh, that was great. I got an interview next Monday." Another guy beeped in from the company just interviewed for and said, "We'd like to offer you the position." And that he just interviewed for. And he was like, "Oh my gosh." And then he almost once again escalated. And he said, "Do I need to get a drug test?" I said, "Stop. Follow their instructions. Let's live in the moment of the gratitude of the job. How incredible this is. What a great job you're going to do." And it really helps. So hear, and I do it, as you said, no one doing the law of attraction ever gets to a point. I mean, I must say no one, but most people don't get to a point where you can't. That's almost a default mechanism. It's the idea that, like, I'm going to get, I'm going to win the lottery, but I'm worried about how are they going to pay it to me. Are they going to pay it long term or are they going to pay it? You're feeding to the law of attraction. Well, yeah, okay, never mind. It's impossible anyway, much less how am I going to get paid? It's just sort of accepting it and then living with it, sitting with it. The law of attraction to me has a lot of Buddhist type feeling to it, you know, where you just sort of let things be, let it sit there. And within the Buddhist teachings, there's a term a lot of people use, is like taking a pause. Just sitting with something, not making good, bad, or indifferent, just sitting with it. And that's a pause is a good way when you feel an escalation in anxiety to take a pause and sit with it. I don't need to escalate to that level. And that's really important as we move forward with, like, this young lady. everything is the first half of the letter is absolutely dead on point. She said it better than we could.
Mm.
But the second half, again, is where you see the incongruencies that we all experience, not just this young lady, mm-hmm. that we all experience is that's how you start filling in the blanks for the law of attraction. It is not what you're thinking. It's what you're feeling. And while thinking can allow a conduit to what you're feeling, it isn't the point of feeling. Thinking isn't feeling. It is a way to get to feelings, and law of attraction simply responds to the emotional energy you're putting out. It's that simple.
Yeah, and the fact is, the thoughts and the feelings are inseparable when you're focusing properly. I mean, when you get the right thought
Absolutely.
Going, you build the feeling builds with it, and that's what builds up the momentum that attracts it. So, I mean, you can't really have
right.
one without the other, you know.
Right. Well, and you see that a lot in the beginning when I often use the when I'm explaining my version of the law of action and how it attaches to the law of attraction, I can explain it even further. It's the law of matching action. You mm. cannot be taking action that doesn't match what you're trying to do, even though you're saying all the right things, but yet preparing for the worst thing. It's picking up on the energy that's driving that other side. So the matching energy is what matters. And that's what we're seeking when we're doing this. The self-talk is incredible. That's what it's about, being happy, being grateful. All those are the places to manifest what you want from. But if you can say you're grateful, but yet feel like you're full of lack, and the feeling of lack will override the thought of gratitude if you don't try to make gratitude your feeling. Does that make sense? Did I say that would have made sense?
Oh, not only did it make sense, it resonated with me because I've actually been doing that lately. I just realized how I was doing that. That in fact, I had, I would do stuff to attract and do it well. And then, like you said, I would start thinking about what the worst case scenario was. And then I try to start planning right. against the worst case scenario and trying to figure, okay, well, all right, well, if this happens, what can I skim back on to make that happen? And like, oh God, what am I doing? No, no, no.
Right. Right. Yeah. And you see that. And so, we're probably the number one complaint I have with people trying to implement the law of attraction is you told me to be positive and things didn't get any better.
Oh yeah.
And I'm like, I appreciate what you're saying. And I told you being positive is a way to start feeling positive. Saying positive things by themselves is not the law of attraction. It is a way to convince yourself internally that you're positive and things are positive and things are good. And that's what we're attempting to do. That's where I used to have the disconnect. And, I would say, oh yeah, things are incredible in my life and I have an abundance. And yet I immediately go online going, oh God, how am I going to cover that bill? How am I going to, it didn't match. I didn't put the same matching category up there of what I was doing. And if I do, once I started doing that, then it changed everything. But again, it's a learning process of making the matching thought in action. And the pervasive feeling, and nobody does it perfect. We all have those moments of incongruency or where it just doesn't quite match. But as you grow in this, there's less and less of that, and you become more and more efficient at not falling into that pattern.
And the rampage she came up with, the part anyway that she shared with us, I am respected and admired at work. I love all the successes I am getting. Achievements flow to me regularly with ease. We reacted well to those because those are excellent affirmations to do. But of course, what's implicit in what we're saying that's so good about those rampage affirmation things is what you just said. If you're feeling that as you're saying it, you're getting all the value out of it. If you're just saying it, you're not
right.
getting any value out of it. If you're just uttering the words, that doesn't
right.
do anything. The feeling has to be associated with it.
Yeah. Well, and this is a great example. There's a gentleman at the gym I work at, one of the gyms I work out at, and really nice guy, and always, he always speaks. And so the other day, we did the obligatory, hey, how are you? Great, how are you? it's just conditioned everybody to say that. And so I did. I was absolutely I was having a great day. And I said, hey, buddy, how are you doing? He says, well, I'm doing incredibly well. Then he went on to tell me everything that was wrong.
And how often have we done that, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I said, so I'm missing the point. So everything's great, but the list of 10 things you just told me is what's wrong. And he laughed. He goes, well, I didn't really think about it. So I just said, great. It's not really great. Things are actually sort of bad. And I said, okay, you're going the wrong way now. and we started looking at, you know, I didn't do this the whole time with him, but right. I took the top two or three things that he thought was wrong. And these weren't wrong things. You know, they were things that he were perceiving as wrong. This was yesterday. And, those of you that follow this type thing is, you know, the stock market was down a little bit yesterday. And he goes, well, you know, the market's down. I'm getting older. I'm really worried. I said, well, that's going to, you know, that worry piece is going to really help the market. And he laughs. He goes, well, he said, yeah. I said, I look at, you know, Amazon is down 20% or whatever it was. I said, what an incredible company. I said, why don't you just buy some more of it? You know, it instead of looking at how bad it is, like it's on sale today. Amazon just went on sale. Buy it.
Yeah, right.
And he laughed. He said, well, I thought about doing that. I said, regardless if you do or not, look at it from a different way. And then we went down the list of, he goes, well, my knee hurts a little bit was one of his complaints. I said, well, the fact you're 60 years old, you've been up, your knee does hurt, but you're in the gym, you're able to walk. Maybe today is helping the knee heal instead of it's not keeping you from working out. And he goes, well, that's a really good point. And so as we addressed the ones, he could see where he was creating his resistance just unintentionally by just sort of viewing the situation. And we all do that. We say we're great. You don't know how many times I hear people say, oh, I'm really a positive person. And then the next 20 minutes, they just go on this rampage of, why everything's wrong and everybody around them is behaving the way they don't want them to behave. It's like, oh, so that's positive. They realize it, but we really, most people, if you ask them, will believe they are positive.
Oh, I think so.
Until they start talking, then you realize that it's really, they're not feeling positive. They're trying to say it. It's a big difference, but it's working.
Oh, yeah. And it can be a pretty severe difference, too. I mean, and I say that from personal experience, because just before I first got exposed to The Secret and the Law of Attraction back in 2007, my wife sat me down. I think I've told you this before. My wife sat me down and said to me, do you realize everything coming out of your mouth is negative? And I instantly reacted, no, it's not. I'm a positive person. And then we start talking about the stuff I'd been talking about, and I realized everything that was coming out of my mouth was negative. I didn't know that. I really thought I was being positive. I thought everything about – I was making the best of a bad situation. I thought I was doing really, really well with my positivity, and I wasn't. I didn't even know I was being negative.
Wow. Wow. And that explains it. I mean, that explains a lot of – I'm trying to think of the how most people look at it. We want to view ourselves as positive, but we, you know, I'll hear people say, well, I'm positive, but I'm a realist.
Yes.
And, I go, well, I'm positive. I'm a realist too. I'm just choosing my real to be exceptional. My real to be, you know, my real is different than your real. And we had this back and forth. I have this back and forth often with people. And they said, well, you just live in I have people tell me, you just create this world that's happy. It's not real. And I go, it's just as real as your world. You're creating your world of not happy. And most people can get there. A lot of people have a hard time believing that. They think it's all out of their control. And that's where a lot of people get stuck. Like we got our letter today. It's like, I've worked for a bunch of crappy bosses. I'm sure she has what her words is or my words. That's your bad bosses.
Mm-hmm.
Her perspective is she has consistently worked for bad employers. Well, that's the reality. And I'm not saying she's not accurate, but her belief system toward that was reinforcing of that or creating that, one
right.
of the two.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, I've worked with some people that are very difficult. There are some really, you know, difficult people to work with in life. But I've never, with the exception of a few cases, I've never not been able to find some kind of currency to work with people, something that drove them, and I'd be able to tap into it. And I often see people get promoted into positions out of their skill set. Mm. And then they're in a place where, you know, they're saying someone's an exceptional salesman making a couple hundred thousand dollars a year within a company. And they're like, we're going to move you to sales manager.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're not a good sales manager, and they are horrible the way they're treating people. They don't realize all this. So they're not successful. Then they get fearful. They become less successful at their job, not realizing they left their skill set and went into something that didn't match their skill set. Mm-hmm. So this happens when you're working with people and being able to help people. I've had people that I've actually said, well, you know, when I'm managing people, I'll look and say, well, look, I'm looking at your performance reviews for the last 10 years and nothing but exceptional. And in the last 2 years, it's just that much need for improvement of, you know, and I said, what changed 2 years ago? And this person I'm thinking about one said, well, that's when I got promoted to this new position. And I said, well, explain what your previous position was. So I'm very engaged with customer service. I was working with people every day. I was selling things on incoming calls, and people would call me, and I would always be able to upsell them. And I said, so then what happened? So I got changed to outside calls where I'm making the calls outward. And I don't like that. It feels intrusive. I'm not as good at it. I'm not closing near as many sales. I said, I don't even need to, you don't need to continue. You've answered your own question.
Yeah. Exactly.
You change jobs that were incredible in your wheelhouses and what you love to a job you hated, and the results and your interactions with people changed. That person immediately changed back to the incoming sales, immediately went back to the top, and she was totally viewed differently within the company once again as this incredibly supportive employee. Mm-hmm. And it all that changed was that, and it was about her perspective.
And it was about the perspective, and it was also about recognizing that the change was within her power. I mean, you kind of had to point it out to her, but she had the power to go to her boss and say, look, this position isn't working for me. I was so much better at the other one. Can you please put me back in the other position? And they did. And it produced the kind of results that she was hoping for. That's really the trick, is looking for that. You know, go ahead.
Her direct manager was on the verge of playing her off.
Wow, wow.
And when she finally went to him and said, I was talking with Joel, and he came to me and he asked, he said, what do you want me to do with this? And I said, well, I said, I'm looking at the evidence. She's right. I know she hasn't performed well the last 2 years, but look, I said, put her back on a probation, give her 30 days to see how she is. And he did that, and she, all of a sudden, she's right back to where she was. And, mm-hmm. and she had the power the entire time to change it. And this company that she's working with had one mission, and that mission was to sell their product. So somebody selling their product greatly on one end of the business, flipping to the other side of the business, not being successful, they saw a drop in revenue. So all they wanted to do was get that person back who was bringing the revenue. Then they're going to go find that right outside salesperson.
Exactly.
And it worked out. And that's what we did. And it's that was internal. But all she had to do, the answer was already within her. It's just she had to have somebody point it out to her.
Now, half the battle there is recognizing that it is within your own power to make the change, or even to discover it and then make the change once you've discovered what it is. Now, there are some situations where people, like, for instance, your friend you were talking with at the health club, who was complaining about a number of things, including a knee injury. And the knee injury, well, how do you get around a knee injury? It seems like it's impossible to get around. And yet, a number of my co-hosts, I imagine you've probably said this too, I can't remember who actually has said it to me, but I've heard it so many times now, have pointed out that when you get a knee, when you have an injury, some kind of pain, the pain is a signal to you. It's basically a good news. It's saying, hey, I'm pointing out to you, I'm flagging you that there's something here you need to know about, that you need to do something about. It's not a bad news thing, it's a good news thing. It's the body doing exactly what it's supposed to do, which is a completely different way of looking at having a sore knee.
Right. Well, it's you know, I'm very big in rewording or redefining words. And Pain is one of the words I've redefined. You know, pain is, you know, you're brought up to avoid pain. You're brought up to, not struggle, and you know, life is better without struggling or pain. Pain is, as you said, it is one of the great gifts we have. It keeps us from further injuring ourselves. It's a signal that, hey, this area needs attention. Most often pain is 99% of the time, it's not serious. It is something like you're saying, my knee's sore. What's going on with my knee? Yesterday I was running, or, I remember that you start to realize what it is. And for me, when I have I still lift very heavy weights as a power lifter. If I notice my knee or my shoulder or something's not quite there, I tend to immediately want to go to that area, and I view it as it's an imbalance in my body. It's like, but the right side of my knee is sore. So I need, maybe the left side of my knee needs to be strengthened. Mm-hmm. Maybe the right side of my knee needs to be, whatever I need to look at, I need to start diagnosing. To me, it's a chance to diagnose a problem before it becomes a problem.
Right.
Pain is, as you said, a wonderful tool. Now we're told, oh, no pain. Let's take some aspirin. Let's get away from it. Taking an aspirin doesn't let you know what goes on. It mutes the pain. While that can be a helpful tool sometimes, the pain is not a bad thing inherent. And that's so important to understand.
Very important. In fact, the whole idea about pain being a warning, I don't remember again who said this. I have so many co-hosts, and I think they've all said it. I think you've said it, and everybody else has said it. But one of the best things to do with the pain is to ask the site of the pain, what message do you have for me? What are you trying to tell me? You're trying to tell me something. What are you trying to tell me? I'll sit here and try to listen quietly. You just tell me what it is you're trying to tell me.
And Walt, that's a great point, and you're right. And it also goes beyond that. If you can start identifying, when you get anxiety, instead of giving into the anxiety and it becoming a perpetual, now, what are you trying to tell me, anxiety? What is the fear here? Why are you fearful of that? What are you concerned about? And it to me, anxiety is just like, hey, I need some attention in this area. And a lot of times anxiety is a total waste of energy and time, but at least it will let you realize, huh, I'm wasting energy on something that's not in my control. For example, like the other day, I'm dealing with a really difficult case right now with work and his family, and it's just they're trying to readjust how they dealt with each other for an entire 25 years, and it's not going well, but they're trying hard. Mm-hmm. And you know, I get texts from, you know, all the different family members, and so this came up the other day, and I saw it was from one of the family members. I was like, oh Lord. You know, I'm like, I felt that coming up, and I'm like, okay, first of all, this is my job. Why? Well, they're so overwhelming at the point that while one of them doesn't realize they're texting me, but all five of them are texting me, and sometimes they'll have an argument, and they all five text me at once.
It's a texting contest.
Yeah, and they don't realize they're doing that. So I basically said, look, we're going to limit your text to me. Let the day save up. I realized my anxiety attached to it had nothing to do with them. I wasn't transferring their anxiety to me. One of the valuable things in my life right now, I mentioned to you before the show, is it's always valuable, but right now I am exceptionally busy in a good, very good way. But my commodity that has the most value right now is my time.
Right.
Time for me right now is an incredibly valuable tool. And so when I get all these texts and they're all going to require, that's time I don't have time to respond to. Mm. And so I identified that to me, the anxiety was had nothing to do with these people. It had to do with my hidden anxiety about, okay, I'm not going to be able to do my job. Blah, 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 all this other self-limiting thoughts. And I said, no, all I need to do is, I need to do better about boundaries. Let's work at boundaries.
Mm.
And I think that's really what I had to do.
Talk about boundaries for a minute. We don't actually discuss that from an LOA perspective very often, but what were you doing with boundaries, and what should people in general do with boundaries? How should somebody use a boundary thing to improve their ability to focus on and attract in the right way what it is they're trying to attract?
Well, a boundary, to me, when you're a boundary is, in my mind, from my profession, and boundaries can mean many things, but the simplest explanation, a boundary is what you allow other people to dictate in your life, how people talk to you, how people, what they demand from you. And setting up boundaries, here's a hypothetical situation that covers a lot of my families. You'll get usually a well-to-do family. The father, for example, is a high-performing professional. He's hardly home at all. The mom is often a stay-at-home mom that's very concerned and very enmeshed with her children. And as the kids grow up, the mom inappropriately befriends the children and starts talking about the dad. Well, your dad's never home. They create a triangulation within the family. So she violates the boundary of a mother-child relationship by talking to the child as a friend and not as a mom. Mm. And she's lonely and doesn't have many friends. So the child almost becomes her best friend. Well, that seems sort of harmless when you talk about it that way. However, as the child grows into a teenager and then the teenage angst and all the other stuff, the child is often reliant on the mom for emotional, they're reliant on that conversation. And in some ways, the child has replaced her husband as the spouse, obviously not in a sexual way, but just in an emotional way. And so the boundary has been greatly violated between an emotional boundary and a communication boundary. And so now the child feels empowered to speak to the mom like she has this full blown, you know, like they're an equal. I don't mean that people aren't equal, but here's an example. This one young lady was needed help with her rent, and her mom were arguing. She's like 25, and so as the mom's handing her the check in my office to pay for the rent, the child, the grown woman child, is telling her mother how, really, you know, I mean, in a very inappropriate way, how pathetic she was and how she needs to really stand up and take care of herself. And as the mom's handing her a check, and I'm going, wait a minute. You're in a very inappropriate mindset right now as far as being angry at your mom as she's handing you a $700 check. And that's where the boundaries have been violated. So boundaries in a law of attraction perspective is, When other people, the bigger boundary here, is not allowing other people to be in control of how you are feeling. That's the boundary we need in place. You and you alone should be in charge of your feeling, not somebody's response to you. And that goes back to grade school. That goes back to, you shouldn't let that happen. I work with my kids all the time, my sons all the time over the years of, when you allow someone to get you so angry, you get in trouble, you've given your emotional power to them. And then the emotional power you're putting out is what the law of attraction, it doesn't care who manifested it, it's going to respond to what you're putting out there. And so boundaries within the law of attraction is really important on the emotional level of keeping boundaries in place of not allowing. I know, over the years, we have talked about various business situations, and you've been in a couple different businesses, and I've shared with you employees of mine that have, not knowing necessarily how to deal with them, especially when it was clearly not going in the right way. And at some point, we have to implement our boundaries and just say, you know, this is business. I'm not here to rehab your life. I'm here to run a business, and so I have to get boundaries in place that are protective of me and my emotions. I don't need others to control my emotions, because that sets me up in the field of the law of attraction. And what I'm putting out there is based on what those people are controlling.
Yeah, that's really a key point, because we are taught by the best teachers in the law of attraction society, if you will, that we are in control of our emotions. At all times, we always get to decide how we're going to react in any given situation, which sometimes seems kind of bizarre, because it feels like sometimes that the events are what are causing our reactions. But in fact, we're the ones who are deciding how to react. And as we, as deliberate creators, learn to become deliberate about deciding how we're going to react, that's where boundaries really become important in a big, big way, because the boundary yeah. issues are where we tend to slip up the most.
Right. Well, and as the great teachers are talking, they're correct. You and you alone are in control of your emotions, unless you've allowed other people to be in control of your emotions.
Exactly, yeah.
You are in control of your emotions until you assign your emotional feeling on someone else. And that's sort of a level, that's a discussion for a later day, but that's a codependent model that mm-hmm. affects a lot of people. When someone's happiness, when your happiness is based on the happiness of your child or your spouse, then you are not accepting control of your emotions. And that's what we're working on, is we're working on developing the boundaries where my emotions are solely at my disposal.
Exactly.
That's the law of attraction. That's what we're seeking. We in society have often allowed other people to, it's a great tool to get elected president. It's a great tool to be able to incite, people with anger and in a sense control their emotions through manipulation. You see it in politics all the time.
It's, oh yeah.
You know, remember when things were great? Well, they're all screwed up because all of these people are doing these things, but I'm going to take care of that for you. It's like, oh, thank you. Yes, great, great. And, you know, in reality, none of it's true.
Nope.
It's just a method of getting things set up.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, there are, we can all name who they are too, but there are a large number of people who make very successful careers out of identifying what we'll call pain points, things that are wrong with society that aren't necessarily really wrong, building that up in a big way and then using the passion that you're building up to basically work the law of attraction in your favor as the politician. And that's great for the politician who wants to get elected. It's not so great for the people who are listening to him, but it's great for the politician who's getting elected. The people who are listening to him are giving all their power away, and I don't think they realize that.
Yes. Well, they don't, and it just is, and that's exactly what we're trying to do, is identify that these are the emotions you're in control of, and by being in control of those emotions, you also in control about letting someone else use them, so to speak.
To use them and to react to them.
Exactly, and that's the piece that we have to be aware of while we're in control over them. If we hand over control to someone else, someone can use them against you or on their behalf, not necessarily on your behalf.
An interesting point, too. It works both with the people who are the supporters of the politician and with the people who are the opponents of the politician, which is really fascinating. But the fact is, when you have the supporters of the politician who are going, rah, 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 yes, I'm behind you, I'm glad you've raised this horrible thing that you're going to solve for us, and then you have the opponents of the politician who are saying, you're such a terrible person, I can't believe you're saying all these things. They're just really, really awful, awful, awful. Both of those people are giving away their power to the politician, and they don't realize it.
Yes, and that's, you know, and it doesn't matter which side you're on, because that's the piece that most people assume they're on the right side. The truth is, not allowing someone to, you know, your reality is yours to continue or believe in. I use the example all the time, trying to help people understand. I intentionally don't do politics, so I'm not trying to get political. But when you're looking at someone born in the inner cities of Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the inner city portion of Detroit, very, very poor upbringing.
Right.
And then you compare someone in, brought up in, you know, in the most wealthy area of Dallas. They did not grow up in the same place.
Not at all.
Did not grow up in the same country.
Right.
Their countries are very different. And that's something that most people don't understand. They could only view their view of their native country is filtered by what they grew up in. So that when you understand that, that's when you can develop empathy or understanding that both views are correct. It's just which one did you go through?
Mm.
And which one did you develop? And that's when you or realize I'm in control of my emotions. I've done some pro bono work in the past with a couple of people that have had really, really, really rough backgrounds, and it's similar to the one I described. And in the beginning, they had no belief at all that they were capable of more than their surroundings.
Mm.
Their surroundings were drug dealers.
Yep.
All males were incarcerated or drug dealers. That was their two options as they grow. You're drug dealers until you get caught about 30 years old, then you spend 25 years in prison, then you come back on the streets, do drugs again for a little while, get arrested, and then you go die in prison. That's pretty much the cycle most of them saw.
Probably also involvement too, because that way they get their community by being involved in a gang, right?
They go, their community supports them. They've never felt that anybody had their back, or they didn't have a community. So the people that stand up for them. So the reality of the gang becomes their reality. It's the most important thing. It's their family. So all of that. So when I'm telling them, I've had a young man tell me, well, we grew up in different backgrounds, so you don't know what I've been through. And I said, I don't know what you've been through, but I've experienced a lot myself in a different way. And I also know that you're giving your belief and reality to what you saw, which I understand, but you're also ignoring there's another side to that. And you also have equal access to that, even though you were never given it as an adult. You have equal access to that now, but you don't believe that. So, And working with people who have been through that, once they get it, they're amazing at getting it. But it's a real hard sell in the beginning.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. But that's also part of the draw to the business that you're in, because when you do get that breakthrough must be incredibly satisfying, not just to you, but to them.
Well, it's life-altering to them.
Life-altering.
That's certainly, it's life already to me too, to be honest with you. But you see that, you see that realization. I posted on Facebook the other day, and I do this sometimes. I guess I am being antagonistic to a certain group at times, not on purpose, but maybe a little. It says, the good news and the bad news basically is there's no one coming to save you. That's the bad news.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, that was
good. The good news is you can save yourself. You're in charge. I mean, it's you. And that piece of the law of attraction is the great thing. It's an equal opportunity law. The law of gravity doesn't discriminate. The law of attraction does not. As practitioners of life, so to speak, and law of attraction, whether we realize it or not, we're the ones that discriminate against ourselves by preconceived ideas. We're self-discriminating when it comes to the law of attraction.
That's true, right. So, thinking back to the email we got from our listener, she didn't realize that she was discriminating against herself. She didn't realize that she was working against herself. I mean, you don't deliberately contradict yourself when you're trying to be a deliberate creator. So, okay, what does that mean? What do you do with it? Do you just give in? Do you say, I'm done, I can't really do anything about it? Or do you decide to take your power back? That's what we're really saying. She has the power to take her power back.
Right. And you at any point in time, you can take your power back. But she discovered, again, this is obviously someone who has thought this out.
She's
way ahead of many, many people in law of attraction, practicing, and you can just tell, but even the best have this non-matching thought, I want this, but I don't want this, or I want that, and I don't want that. But the truth is you're in control. What you don't want is what you're attracting, just because you're thinking about it. What you do want, if you're doubting, or you're thinking the opposite thought, you're not attracting. It's crazy how that works. It's like with money, you can attract money until you're trying too hard to attract money. Then you're presenting it as a resistance.
Yeah. Well, and money is probably the best example of that. Health might be number two. Relationships probably tied for number two now that I think about it. But money is definitely the number one way that we do that. Because we want to attract the money. And then we come up with all these different ways to prevent ourselves from attracting the money. It's just It's amazing.
It is. It's, you know, like the young man that was, you know, had a great interview. And then he's like concerned about, you know, should I invest in my 401k? Should I do this? Like, okay, you're creating the opposite feeling of what you're intended. I want you to envision having the job, not the stress created by decisions you're going to make, but we see that frequently, with really anything. What's the worst case scenario? What is the worst case scenario? Let's start with that. Why do we go there? Why do we do that?
It's a funny thing about worst case scenarios too, because when you actually look at them, suddenly they don't seem all that worst case anymore. The only reason that they're worst case is because you weren't looking at them up close in person.
Well, to me, when I was in the middle of my addiction and things were falling apart, the worst case scenario for me was I was going to be going to jail.
Mm.
And I would worry about that, and it was horrible, and I kept thinking, well, no, that's not going to happen. A miracle will happen. I won't go to jail. And I started, like, trying to use the law of attraction, not go to jail. And, well, then I went to jail. Mm. Like, well, that didn't work.
Yeah, right.
Well, the truth was, not only was that not the worst case, that going to jail was not a worst case scenario, it was a incredible eye-opening learning experience for me that set me on a new path. So my worst case scenario is one of the most transformative moments in my entire life.
Which is not the way most people would look at it at a worst case scenario. How could a worst case scenario be a transformative moment?
Right. And that's what you're in control of. How are you going to look at it? What are you worried about today? And then when you break it down, one of the therapies that that people can look up online or just, I'll explain it, but the circle therapy. I don't know if you've ever heard of that concept, Walt, but circle therapy in general it seems like anti-law of attraction in the beginning, but the reason it isn't, during a controlled setting, circle thinking is actually sitting down with someone, discussing what your fear is, describing what your view of the worst case scenario is, and then dissecting that worst case scenario, realizing, just like you're saying, it's not a worst case scenario. It is what it is. Then you come back to where you're at, and you have desensitized yourself to the worst case scenario, so to speak, because you realize it's just not that.
Yeah.
And most stresses are just created by that churning and churning and churning.
Well, exactly.
And that's not what we need.
No, not what we need is what we do most often. We do most often what we don't need, which is really bizarre, but it's true. And we're all, you know, we've all done it. We've all experienced it. The good news is recognizing and understanding we don't have to continue that pattern. We can actually shift it around. And the process you just described, I had never heard it labeled that way, but it's pretty much what all the other co-hosts say as well. I mean, because it's really, the way I say it is, it's the difference between going in and examining this thing that you don't like on the one hand for the purpose of desensitizing and, like you said, desensitizing and ultimately to dissolve it, make it go away, and just because you've dealt with it. That's on the one hand. And on the other hand, living in it. Living in that pain point, that terrible place, day in, day out, week after week, month after month. That's the difference. If you're doing the first one, you're actually getting it out of the way. If you're doing the second one, you're attracting the exact opposite of what you want.
Completely. And that's so well put. And that's everything. That's everything in this. It's being able to identify the emotional resistance you have in the law of attraction, whatever technique or term you want to use to do that, but take its power away. If you know what you fear, the reason what you fear most is what you invite most is not because you're doing it on purpose. It's just because that's what the law of attraction picks up on, desensitizing yourself to that. Then it gives you the opportunity to realize, you know, I've had a million worst case scenarios happen to me, and all of them except one has turned out to be a best case scenario. So that's a pretty good batting average.
That's a very good batting average. That's all we can all aspire to.
Yeah.
So this has been good. This has been very good. Before we go, I want to, first of all, remind people to subscribe and share. That's like we said at the beginning of the program, so you can keep getting all these episodes. Second of all, Joel, for somebody, you're like one of the best life coaches I know. If somebody needs a little personal attention, how do they reach out to you?
JoelElston.com or JoelElston@gmail.com. Either way, you can reach me that way, and I'll be glad to speak with you or refer you to somebody who can help you.
There we have it. All right, Joel, it's been a pleasure. I look forward to talking to you again next week.
You too, my friend.
All right. We'll see you all next time as well here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.